Hello, folks. Welcome to First Thursday, the monthly podcast from the Labor Relations Information System. My name is Will Aitchison, and today I'm going to be talking about something very different. I've got some cases to talk about, if I get to them, to be sure. But the events of the last week have been so completely profound that I would just simply be wrong not to discuss what's going on, and in particular to talk about it from my little slice of things, which is the law enforcement labor movement. And I want to read you some headlines. All of these headlines are from the last 24 hours, and we're not focusing in these headlines. We're not focusing on the George Floyd incident, except that, of course, what happened to George Floyd is at the heart of it all. But rather, these headlines are going to focus on police unions. First one, from Reason Magazine. And I don't know if you know Reason Magazine. It is a very, very Republican magazine, far right of center. Headline: it's time to bust police unions. Next headline, from National Review Magazine. This is the magazine that was started by William F. Buckley, longtime, firmly conservative magazine politically. George Floyd's death brings into focus police unions protecting bad cops. Something called the California Policy Center. And I pull this one out not because there was a lack of other national headlines I could have read you, but rather because this is one of these state groups. And this is, again, a conservative group. Most of this type of call is coming from the right side of the political spectrum. This is from an outfit called the California Policy Center. Every state has something like the California Policy Center. You know who the funders are and what their attitudes are towards government. Headline: if you want police reform, you have to rein in police unions. And then other headlines that are just as troubling, but in a different way. AFT. That's the American Federation of Teachers. NEA, National Education Association, demand overhaul of police practices. Next headline: members of the AFL-CIO call for the AFL-CIO to drop police unions. The major police union in the AFL-CIO is the International Union of Police Associations, IUPA. And what you are seeing is a call from member unions of the AFL-CIO to drop police unions. And then you're seeing all sorts of calls around the country. This from left of center, The Guardian: defund the police in the U.S. And I'm only reading you half a dozen of the dozens and dozens and dozens of articles that I have seen in the last 24 hours on this issue. And it's really stunning. And I think if those of us involved in the public safety labor movement don't take this seriously, we could be looking at the beginning of the end of the public safety labor movement. Now, I know when you read these headlines, you react emotionally, you react viscerally. I do. I did. And we have to get over that as well. We have to decide what it is we are going to do for the good of public safety employees everywhere. And I'm firmly convinced that the answer to that question is revitalize public safety unions. Police and fire unions negotiate better lives for their members, better wages, better benefits. If they go away, and don't make any mistake about it, if it starts with police unions, it's not going to end there. If these unions go away, the lives of police officers and firefighters and corrections officers everywhere in the country are going to be fundamentally changed. Look, in 2016, in wake of what happened in Ferguson, I put together a list of 10 things that I thought that police unions should be thinking about doing. And I dusted it off this morning. And I took some time to update it and change it. Strikingly to me, not so much has changed between now and 4 years ago when we were having somewhat of the same discussions. What has changed is the fervor behind the movement to attack police unions. I am reading legislation all over the country that either cuts back on union rights or imposes reforms on police that are simply appalling. I read a piece of legislation apparently being fast-tracked in Colorado yesterday. This piece of legislation would make police officers personally liable for the first $100,000 of damages in a civil lawsuit, even if the officers were acting in good faith, and would prohibit employers from defending and indemnifying officers under those circumstances. I've read legislation in Oregon in the last 24 hours that would end the principle of binding arbitration. Binding arbitration, of course, under attack everywhere. Now look, you and I have been through the facts on this enough times. We know that arbitrators aren't the source of the problem here. When police departments issue discipline in this country, 99% of the time that discipline is upheld. 99% plus of the time it is upheld. But that's not the public perception. What we have is a fundamental gulf between the realities of police work and police union and the public perception of police work and police unions. How do we bridge that gap? There's really only one way to do it. We have to reinvent what it is police unions are doing. So let me give you what the 10 points are, and I'll talk about them as we go through them. And by the way, I welcome any suggestions, comments, or criticisms you have about any of this. We got to do this thing together. We got to get it right. And you know what? We have to do it now. We can't sit back and wait. Okay. Proposition number one, engage at all levels. Police unions need to be out there in the community talking, giving their message out. And they have to do it every place they can. I tell my clients, go to every meeting you can possibly go to. You don't have to be making controversial statements. You don't have to be talking about wages or benefits or staffing or anything like that. Be a presence in your community. That means every time your city council or board of supervisors or board of commissioners meets, you're there. That means every time there's a subcommittee of those groups, you are there. If you have civilian oversight in your city or your county, and the majority of big cities and counties now have some form of civilian oversight, you are at every meeting. Neighborhood councils, the Chamber of Commerce, even though this Chamber of Commerce has this long history of being anti-union, you go to those meetings. You engage people. You talk to them. You let them know that you're not a uniform, but you're a human being. Citizen crime groups, victims groups. When's the last time you went to one of those meetings? It should have been last month. There are interest groups that meet out there that have some interest in law enforcement. For example, local business groups. Go to those meetings. Participate in police community forums, even if the other four people on that panel are people who have said incredibly terrible things about you. Unless you're on that panel, no one is going to hear a voice other than those four voices. You go. Participate in television interviews, talk shows, whatever it might be. Whenever you have the opportunity to be present, to engage, to talk, to humanize yourself, do it. Number two, listen. Listen to what people have to say. There's very heartfelt thoughts out there. And look, I think one of the fundamental problems that we have right now is that we view things in a binary mode. Either you're the police or you're the community, or you're a Republican or you're a Democrat, or you're a good guy or you're a bad guy, or whatever it might be. None of those groups are monolithic, right? There's an entire continuum of people. In every one of those organizations, we are all a mixture of all of us. And that means there are going to be points of compromise that you can find when you're having discussions. Now, look, I'm not a Pollyanna-ish person. I know there are going to be some people with whom it is impossible to engage because of where they are in their life. I've been on those panels. You have to be the reasonable person at the table on those panels. You should be there listening, hearing what the individuals have to say, trying to figure out the source of what those strong emotions are, and see whether or not there is a place in the middle where you can at least start to talk. Third, get your message out. You've got a very, very powerful message. And the message is the job you do. Not just the nature of the job itself, how difficult it is to be a law enforcement officer, how impossible it is to be a law enforcement officer in many settings. No one has a good idea, unless you've been there and been in your shoes, what it's like to take a combative suspect into custody. You need to be talking about the nature of the job, but you also need to be talking about how difficult it is to be an officer today. I'll tell you a little story. I'm from Portland, Oregon, and we had demonstrations that devolved into riots. We've had them several days running. Last night, thankfully, was better than other nights. The worst of our nights was last Friday night. And I made a point of going to downtown Portland on Saturday morning to walk around and see what had happened. And I ended up being somewhat profoundly depressed by what I saw. As I walked through our beautiful city, I saw that it had been trashed. Millions of dollars of damage, if not tens of millions of dollars of damage done to downtown Portland. I walked around one of those downtown upscale shopping malls. The sidewalk outside was littered with empty clothes hangers. The clothes that had been on those hangers 24 hours before, of course, were looted. I looked at graffiti all over the place, including the ever-present ACAB graffiti. I looked at plate glass windows, floor-to-ceiling windows, that had been completely shattered out of existence. I walked by the Louis Vuitton store where someone or some groups of people took $80,000 in handbags. I looked at the Apple store where a 20-foot floor-to-ceiling window was no longer in existence and the store had been looted. And when you see your own city in that condition, much less what you see, you out there on the line see, when you're behind those shields, or maybe even not behind the shields, when you're having rocks and incendiary devices thrown at you, and you're called every name in the world. When you see those things, it is hard not to get profoundly depressed. But the most important thing that happened to me in downtown Portland on Friday was where I ended up. I ended up at what's known as the Justice Center in Portland. Downstairs in the Justice Center is Portland's Central Precinct. It had been broken into Friday night, and a fire had been set in Central Precinct. On the top floors of the Justice Center are the administrative offices and detectives and the police bureau. And the middle floors, many of them, are a jail. So this fire was set by protesters on the ground floor of a building where inmates were incarcerated on numerous floors above it. There was a police tape outside and a number of police officers. This was 9 in the morning. Things had calmed down. And one of the officers started talking to me, and he knew that I'd been out here representing police for many years. And the other officers and some deputy sheriffs kind of sidled over time, and we had a 10 or 15 minute conversation. These officers, you could tell right away, these were good cops, right? You could tell by the concern in their voices. You could just tell by the message that they were giving. And they were a rainbow of people. They were white, they were black, men, women, older officers, newer officers, and to a person, they had the same feeling of malaise, of depression, that I had. And when I left there, one of the younger officers called me aside. And he's a deputy sheriff in Multnomah County, young African-American officer. And you could just tell talking to the guy, great future in law enforcement. Multnomah County, they still require a bachelor's degree to be a deputy sheriff, so knew he's college educated. And I'd never met him before. And he said, look, man, you've been here a long time. Have you ever seen it this bad? And the answer I had to give him was no. Or at least I started to give him that answer. And then some young kid walked by on the street behind me and started shouting at them. And he quickly had to turn his attention elsewhere. I tell you that story because the public does not understand how difficult it is for you to be law enforcement officers today. Not just the cop part of the job, but the personal part of the job. How difficult it is for you to see that horrific video from Minneapolis, to see officers engaged in conduct that you find appalling, and to have yourself tarred with that same brush. And then for you to go home to your families who have undoubtedly been getting the same message from their family members and from their friends. We need to make sure that the public understands that there are good people doing this work. That's why people do this work. And we need to understand, we need to get them to understand that the toxic nature of the conversation today is going to deter people from doing the work in the future. I walked away from that impromptu meeting at the Justice Center thinking I'd be surprised if half of those folks were in law enforcement a year from now or 2 years from now. And what young man or woman, idealistic young man or woman, who wants to give their professional life to service to their community would want to become a law enforcement officer today? The public needs to understand this, and it needs to be an essential part of your message. How else do you get your message out? Get your local media and community leaders in your patrol cars. Have them come to your training. Put them through citizens' academies. Repeat as often as necessary. They need to understand that you're a person. Fourth suggestion, be proactive. Seek people out. Don't wait for them to come to you. If you hear somebody who says something that you disagree with, approach them. Talk to them. These may be people you dislike or disrespect, but unless you're actually engaged in a conversation with them, what chance is there that you can ever move them? You can ever find common ground? It's not going to happen overnight, right? But if you're persistent, it might. A little secret, it's not really a secret, I guess, except I've never told anybody. For years now, for 10 years or so, whenever I will read an article in a paper about policing or public safety unions that I dislike, or I'll read a journal, a professional journal or something like that, and we're set up here in LRIS where we try to get headlines from all over the country every day, everyone that we can possibly locate about police and fire and labor and everything like that. When I read something I dislike, I write the person. I've written hundreds of emails to people, citizens, lawyers, leaders of activist groups, professors, and they don't always answer. Most of the time they don't answer. But sometimes they do. And sometimes we've had some pretty good conversations. So, for example, in this last week, there is a blog out there called Marginal Revolutions. It's run by a couple of economics professors at George Mason University, Tyler Cowen and Alex Tabarrok. Those two and I are not going to agree on much at all. They're sort of way out there libertarians, but they're very bright. Cowen in particular, probably a polymath sort of guy. And they wrote something, each of them wrote something separately, saying the problem here is police unions. And they cited studies. I went to all of the studies and I wrote each of them and said, you know what? You can't simply on a blog repost something like that without looking at the underlying studies. Because when you look at the underlying studies that you cited, they don't support your proposition. And you know what? I'm in conversations with both of them right now. I have no idea who these people are. We've never met. But that's what you need to be doing. Reaching out to people you've never met, you've never talked to get your message out. My fifth suggestion, and this I suspect is going to be the most controversial, no matter what the provocation, react professionally. The confrontational politics of old need to change. Do you need better evidence that they don't work than what we are seeing right now? I don't think so. But let me give you some evidence. I think we'd probably all agree that the best example, the most prevalent example, the most long-standing example of confrontational police union politics in the country is in New York City, where both the Patrolmen's Benevolent Association and the Sergeants Benevolent Association, separate unions, have been engaged in a public battle with now a series of mayors. You remember Pat Lynch, the longtime president of the PBA, talking about how the mayor had blood on his hands following the killing of a police officer. You remember the PBA organizing officers, turning their backs on the mayor when he arrived at an officer's memorial service. You can remember the PBA following the mayor to his health club and protesting outside his health club. or following him to Iowa when de Blasio, Mayor de Blasio, had his failed run at the Democratic nomination for president. They followed him to Iowa so that they could tell everybody in Iowa what a bad guy he was. The Sergeant's Benevolent Association in the last 10 days referring to a city health director as a bitch, that's their word, on a Twitter post, publishing the arrest record of the mayor's daughter. The mayor's daughter was arrested in a protest, and the SBA actually published her home address. These are just examples. I mean, these unions have been at war with the city of New York, with the mayor of the city of New York, going all the way back to the days of Mayor John Lindsay. And that's way, way back. That's into the 1960s. What's the result? You know what I care about when I'm representing police unions? I care about wages and benefits. That's the number one priority for, or should be in my mind, the number one priority for police unions. And how do the New York tactics work? How have they worked over time? Well, the top step salary for a New York police officer is a little bit more than $7,000 a month. If you leave New York, you can go into two different counties, Suffolk County and Nassau County. If a New York police officer were working in Suffolk County, they'd be making $9,292 a month, $2,000 a month more. Into Nassau County, $3,000 a month more. And I could give you examples in other cities where the hub city is not paid nearly what the suburbs are paid. I'm not pulling any punches in this podcast. Look at Chicago. And I could give you other examples where we see unions that have been engaged with the community, where the wages and benefits that they've been able to negotiate are the highest in the state. My home city of Portland, for example, a great example. So my point here is that these confrontational politics, I don't think they ever worked, but does anybody think they're working right now? Does anybody think that they will be a way to head off the changes in collective bargaining laws, the changes in laws regulating police practices? Does anybody think that? Now, some of you, I'm sure, are probably thinking, well, look, you know, President Trump is in office. He supports the police, and we got Republicans in charge of the Senate. Well, this morning, Chuck Grassley, very highly placed Republican in the Senate, has announced that he is going to start judicial hearings on the use of force. You can't rely on what's going on at the national level. Your politics need to be professional. They can't be the confrontational politics of old. That leads me nicely into number six. Meet with your local politicians every month. Every month, you ought to be meeting with one city council member or two, or a board of supervisors member, and you ought to be sitting down with them over coffee. No matter what their politics, no matter what their background, no matter what they've said about you in the past, you need to be sitting down with them. You don't need to be, you don't need to go in there with a particular agenda. Don't just go in when it's bargaining time, for example, or there's some sort of staffing issue or there's a local police community issue. You just go in and you build a relationship with them. Because you know what? That relationship can be critical in the future when we get to a crisis. Number seven, police unions need to rebuild their relationships with other unions. Too often, police unions have been off on their own. not participating in local union groups or coalitions or whatever they might be called, not communicating on a regular basis with the presidents of other unions. When's the last time you sat down for lunch or coffee with the president of, for example, the General Employees Union in your city or county? What we are seeing right now is that the failed relationship between police unions and other unions has brought us to the point where the other unions are turning on police unions. Not just turning their backs and not helping, but being part of the attacks. In Minnesota, get ready for this. There are noises out of the Minnesota AFL-CIO attacking binding arbitration for police unions. Now, sure, they don't understand that, you know, the old line, you know, they came from my neighbor, but they didn't come from me, so I didn't do anything. And then they came from me. I mean, sure, they don't understand that. But the fact of the matter is we have unions arguing against the very core of what it is to have job protections in a collective bargaining agreement, a neutral decision by a third party. Police unions need to get out of their shell and in the community of other labor organizations. Meet with them on a regular basis. Talk with them on a regular basis. Once again, I don't care if they have been marching against you, and that's actually happening in some places right now. That doesn't matter. We're talking about what the future is going to be, not the past. Number 8, establish a community presence. And this, the value of this, you simply cannot overstate. I'm going to give you a little war story here. And it's a war story from Anchorage, Alaska. And I think it's the best example of the importance of a community presence. So Anchorage, Alaska, bargains under a local ordinance. There's a statewide collective bargaining law in Alaska, but municipalities had the option to opt out of the coverage of the collective bargaining law. And in the 1970s, they did. And Anchorage passed its own ordinance. And what that means when you bargain under a local ordinance is that on any given night when your city council is meeting, and in Anchorage that was Tuesday, the governing body, the city council, can repeal or modify the collective bargaining ordinance. The Anchorage Police Association, all this has been made public by the APDEA, as it's called, many years ago, so I feel free to say it now. The Anchorage Police Association in the late 1980s, early 1990s, was in pretty dire straits. Didn't have a big war chest. A conservative Republican mayor had been elected. He actually ran on the plank that police were being paid too much money. And it just simply didn't look good. The politics in Alaska, very, very conservative compared to the, what they call the lower 48. So there was really a possibility that any given Tuesday was going to occur, and the very existence of collective bargaining in Anchorage was either going to be fundamentally affected or it was going to end. So what the APDEA did was to create a strategic plan that asked itself, where do we want to be in 3 years, in 5 years, in 7 years? Where do we want to be financially? Where do we want to be with respect to our collective bargaining agreement? Where do we want to be with respect to the community? And how do we get there? And they decided that, among other things, establishing a community presence was vital. And they did. Every meeting they could go to, they went to. an organization called Stand Together Against Rape. They were on the board of Stand Together Against Rape. The Anchorage Chamber of Commerce, this actually blew me away. The police union became the primary voice for law enforcement on the Anchorage Chamber of Commerce. They were all over the place at neighborhood meetings, doing kinder print, doing shop with a cop. They started a coffee with a cop program. I could go on and on and on, and they went on and on and on. And then several years ago, Tuesday night happened. We had another one of those mayors. This guy was actually kind of a Tea Party sort of mayor. He put together rushed legislation, and by a 6-5 vote, the city council in Anchorage adopted an ordinance. It was called AO37, an ordinance that would have fundamentally ended collective bargaining in Anchorage. And not only that, would have called for an average wage and benefit decrease of 35% for members of the police union. The police union gathered enough signatures to get the repeal of AO37 on the ballot, and the voters got to weigh in. These conservative voters got to weigh in. These voters who tend to be anti-labor got to weigh in. And you know what they did by now. They approved the repeal of the ordinance. They sided with the men and women they had seen in all of these different community events. The community events built a relationship and built trust. It was more important than any amount of money in the bank. Every police union in the country needs to be doing something like that. Number 9, some of you are going to hate me about this one as well. Stop being aligned with one political party. I'm real pragmatic about the issue of politics and police unions. You support who supports you, not people who are giving lip service to you, not someone who's going to pat you on the head and say, we stand with the cops and we hate the other guys. I want to see what it is they've done. I want to see what it is they've done to improve your wages or your benefits or your safety or your work life or your collective bargaining rights. And if they haven't done anything, I don't care what they are saying publicly. You start supporting the other guy. If you are aligned with one political party, wherever it is you are, you could be in a liberal part of the country or you could be in a conservative part of the country. If you're aligned with one political party, what happens when the other party comes into power? And it's going to happen. You know, it changes. Then you're going to find the very core of your existence at risk. I read something this morning that said, it was talking about how police unions are becoming more politically conservative. The members of police unions are becoming more politically conservative. Which I think probably is an accurate assessment, by the way. This article, what struck me was that the last time the Fraternal Order of Police supported a Democratic candidate for president, what do you think? 1996, 24 years ago. Some of your members weren't alive them. And what happens if in this November election we see, as many are predicting right now, a huge shift in national politics from Republicans to Democrats? What is going to happen in terms of legislation that comes out of Congress? Police unions need to be supporting pro-police candidates, not political parties. The ever-shifting winds of politics put you at risk if those winds are going to shift against you. And lastly, and this is a mechanical issue, this is not a structural one, If you don't have an online presence that you are constantly maintaining and pushing out there, you're not communicating with the public adequately, and not in this day and age, you're not. And yes, to be sure, that means Facebook, although Facebook's kind of an older medium at this point. You want to be on Twitter, you want to be on Instagram, you want to make sure that those people who weren't born in 1996, who are your members, you want to make sure you involve them in your social media outreach program to make sure you're doing things right. And if you can afford it, you get consultants in who can help you with your messaging. But in addition to all of the in-person meetings and all of the one-on-ones that I have been suggesting, your online presence, I don't think, can be underestimated. And it's something that requires diligence. It requires a lot of work. But you know what? Unless we do that, we're not going to be communicating with all members of the public. Okay, that's it. My rant is over. I'm really worried. And I think there's time to change. But we have to start that process of change right now. What has been happening in this country in the last few years with respect to the police-community relationship cannot be allowed to continue. And police unions don't just need to be part of the solution, they need to be pushing the solution. Well, with that, this is Will Aitchison signing off. Be well, everyone.